Division code 41.
Secret Affair by Danny McCahon, based on characters created by Peter Turnbull. Secret Affair.
I knew she was going to be trouble.
Don't pop your cook. I can handle it.
That's not how it looks from where I'm standing. And I'll tell you, Max, I'm not going to hang around and wait for the shit to start flying.
I'm 36 years of age. I'm big enough to make my own decisions.
God knows you're big enough to make your own mistakes.
You got it.
Just don't come crying to me when you start proving me right.
What?
Rattle your jacks.
Hey, watch where you're going. You're
sitting
in there anyway.
Sorry, I'm sure. You heard the lady. No public allowed. Doors open at 8.
I'll come back in my uniform if that'll help. I'm WPC Willem. This is Detective Constable Montgomery.
Sorry, I didn't realise. I wasn't thinking.
And you are?
I'm Max. I'm the manager of the Laughing Tree. We're just running a sound check here, as you can see. Is there something I can do for you? We're very busy.
And we'll hear about the robbery.
What robbery?
You tell us.
Somebody reported a theft. A very expensive guitar.
Oh, right. A Gibson Les Paul. No, that was a mistake. It showed up in the wrong van.
And nobody bothered to tell us it had been phoned.
I didn't even know you'd been called. Must have been one of those roadies getting a bit overzealous. I'm sorry you've been called out on a wild goose chase. I'll get into his head about this.
That's all right. All part of the service.
You're Australian, yeah?
Yeah, a long way from home. Hey, look, let me give you some comps or something so you haven't completely wasted your time.
It's all part of the job, as I said.
I must have left my wallet and my jacket somewhere.
Look, it's all right. Don't bother.
Oh, come on, I'm sure a couple of tickets for the gig won't get you tanned.
No, I suppose not. Yeah, go right ahead. It's not as if we're doing anything to earn them.
Shit, I really ought to get a new wallet. This thing's been falling apart since the land. It's okay, I'll get them.
Oh, I've heard about these things, but it's the first time I've actually held a platinum card.
Enjoy.
Well, here you are, Mr. McVeigh.
Call me Max, please. Everyone does. Anyway, here are the tickets. Hope you enjoy the show.
That'll do nicely.
Well, I'm sure you'll find somebody to go with.
I don't know. I was rather hoping you'd come. Expand your horizons. Musical ones, of course.
Never give up, do you?
I live in hope, Elka. A man can dream, can't he? You sure you won't come? This is supposed to be a good band, you know. When you're fly-by-night three-chord merchants, they're a good night out. You'd enjoy it. He pulled Sussex from taking you for granted.
Malcolm, nobody takes me for granted. I'm perfectly happy the way I am. You've got the tickets. I'm sure you can find somebody in your little black book.
That's my police notebook, Elka. Honest. So is that your last word? You're not coming?
Malcolm, which part of no don't you understand?
It's a shame. It is, honestly. I've got a real soft spot for you, Elka.
The only soft spot you've got is the one between your ears.
Oh, well, plenty more fish in the sea. Yeah, and these will do for bait. I'll dangle them at the end of the phone line when we get back to the station.
We'll be right back.
Martha, what do you think?
No, no, we're up too much.
Listen, in the afternoon, do you want to go for a drink somewhere?
Yeah, I'll be all right.
What have you got for two down?
Two down, let's see. Preamble.
It can be. There's a Q in it. Manny Cross is definitely eloquent. So the third letter in two down is Q.
Two down has to be preamble. Can't be anything else. Eight letters, the introduction to a statute. It's preamble. Are you sure about nine across? What makes you think it's eloquent? That's not even an adverb.
You two got your noses stuck in a crossword again.
There's nothing else doing, Sarge.
Oh, is that so, I mean?
It's true enough, Sarge. It's been a quiet night.
Well, since you're so keen to help him out, maybe you won't mind helping him with that pile of paperwork that's spilling out of his tray.
I've got some of my own, Sarge.
Then get it done. Nine across. Eloquent. Where'd you get that? The assessor.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, right, right.
Got it, I'm on my way. Right, King, you're coming with me to the Hilton. Abernethy, you get these reports written up and try fluently.
Eh?
The Hilton Hotel, is that, Sarge? Somebody been stealing the towels?
There's been a fire. A young lass is dead.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, come in, Sergeant, come in. I think you're going to find this one very interesting. Evening, Mr. King.
Dr. Reynolds. Looks pretty well confined to the bed area. They surely didn't fall asleep with a cigarette on the go.
No, it's unlikely. Though it's always possible they might have been very drunk. That would have been my first guess, I suppose, till I noticed this. See this, huh? Melted plastic in her hair.
Oh.
Looks as if this girl had her head covered with a plastic bag.
Somebody suffocated her?
Well, I won't know for sure until I carry out a full post-mortem, but don't appear to be any signs of a struggle.
Suicide?
Well, if it is, she must have had some help. That looks like insulation tape around her neck and, yes, secured at the back, moreover. I'd say suicide was unlikely, although there's no accounting for taste.
You're looking thoughtful, Sergeant.
Yes. I'm hoping you're not going to tell me that bag was full of Eva stick.
Well, funnily enough, that's the way it looks.
Do we know her name? Any identification?
Your man Montgomery is on that just now. She was booked in with an Australian party, some pop group or other.
Montgomery? What's he doing here? As far as I know, he's in mornings this week.
Well, he was here when I arrived. Anyway, that's me finished here. I'll get the body at the GRI once your scene of crime officers are through. Will you be joining me for the PM, Sergeant?
No, thanks, Doctor. I'll wait for your report.
Yes, well, I don't know when I'll be able to get it typed up. Afraid Noreen's in the throes of her wee problem again.
You're very patient with us, sir. She's better looking.
Oh, well, what can you do? There's times when she taxes that patience, though, and I don't think she'll be in tomorrow, if you're in a hurry for this.
Oh, well, okay, Doctor. I'll be there.
All right. Bye for now, then, Sergeant. Mr. King.
Good night, sir.
How come there's never a straightforward crime committed in the middle of the night?
Sarge, how did you know about the glue?
Travis Bickle.
Travis what?
That's the name of a band, Travis Bickle. A punk rock group in the 70s.
Never heard of them. Wouldn't have thought that was your scene, Sarge. Punk rock?
No, it was a case. Somebody murdered a singer, a young fella called Devlin. Covered his head with a bag full of glue and torched his hotel room.
What kind of sicko would do that? No, daft question, I suppose. Same sort of sicko as did this. Did you get a result?
No, we didn't. We were inches away from charging another one of the group, a guy called Joseph Corbett. Then he turned up dead. Killed in exactly the same way.
That's weird.
Well, every lead we had been up in flames along with Corbett's body. The case has never been solved.
It's a bit of a gap for a copycat.
It sure is.
Aye. It's Sharon, all right. It couldn't be anybody else.
This isn't something you can guess at, Deirdre. And you haven't seen the body yet.
It's her room. And I've talked to the rest of the lassies since the fire, so it's no any of them.
Can you give me a name and address for the next of kin?
That'll be her dad, I suppose. I think his first name's Ian. Ian Craig, that'll be. They live in the high flats on Shawbridge Street, over beside the borough. I've got a phone number somewhere. Hang on, I'll get my bag.
It's all right. We'll find the address. She lives on the south side, you said.
So what's she doing staying in a hotel less than 5 miles from her house?
Well, it was a big night, wasn't it? At least that's how it started out. Oh, God.
Take your time, Deirdre.
You see, this was my big break. I know that sounds sort of... Well, it's just that we wanted to savour it. Me and Shan, we're in a group called The Secrets. All girls sort of grunge band, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know. I've heard you. I was at the gig.
Really? What do you think?
I thought you were very good.
Oh. Well, Shan kept us at it. She was really... Anyway... That's why she was staying here.
So how did you get this gig, supporting the Laughing Tree? Did Shan fix that up, or have you got a manager, or what?
No, it was Shan. This was our first big gig. I mean, we've played Nice and Sleazy a couple of times, and King Tut's. But I don't know how Shan swung this one. She just showed up at the rehearsal space. We rent this place out of Busby. And Shan just turned up one night and she says, "That's it, we're supporting the Laughing Tree at the Barrowland." We thought she was bluffing. But sure enough, we meet this Max guy and he says we're in. Anyway, this was the last date in Scotland. They're on this, like, European tour. They're Australian, you know.
Yeah.
And well, they wanted to go out in style. So they organised this big bash at the hotel. I mean, they're helping, for God's sakes. And Max insists the support band gets rooms as well, so as we don't need to worry about getting home. God, what am I saying?
It's okay, Deirdre, take it easy. Okay? So tell me, you were at this party after the gig. Did you notice anything unusual about Shan's behaviour?
No, not really. The place was mobbed, and there was a lot of... drink on the go. Actually, I was too busy fighting after their drummer to notice anything.
Whose drummer? The Laughing Tree?
Aye. Oh, he was mental.
How do you mean?
Oh, nothing out of the ordinary. It's just that every time I turned round, he was there. Horns every place. Aiming for a bit of me I like to keep to myself, you know? That sort of mental. You know the type.
Yeah,
well, eventually I had to tell him where to go. Hang up, I says. Hang off, or you'll need to learn to play the drums with your teeth. Well, that did the trick. He was a right creep.
So how about Shannon? Try to think back, Deirdre. You must have seen Shannon at some stage.
Well, I did say goodnight to them when I was on my way up to bed. Everybody was steaming, and I don't drink, so it wasn't much fun. Anyway, there's no every second Tuesday a lassie for the Carlton gets a chance to stay in a place like this. So I've decided to call it a day and have a long soak in the bath with the radio playing too loud before I went to my kip.
You said goodnight to them. Who was that? Was that the other girls in the band or what?
No, Sean and Max.
You're sure it was him?
Oh, aye. The manager of the Laughing Tree. Aye, it was definitely him. Him and Sean were sitting in the lounge with a bottle of champagne on the makings of a giant tequila slammer.
Were Sean and Max getting on okay? I mean, what sort of relationship was it, do you think?
God. She'd hardly been away for each shut-tail the whole day. Me and the other girls, we thought she was just hustling. Working for us all.
Hustling?
Aye. You see, Shan was obsessed with making it in the music business. The rest of us, we were just in the band for a few laughs. But Sharon... Oh, God. Talk about ambition. Anyway, somebody like Max could do us a lot of favours, the sort of contacts he had. And Shan would have done anything to get in his good books.
Anything?
If you mean sex, the answer's aye. Anything.
Yes, the question here, Sergeant, is what exactly killed her? Was it the solvent or the fire? You see, if she inhaled enough solvent from the bag, it could bring on asphyxia, and that would have killed her. But then again, if she didn't, it might still have sent her into coma, in which case the fire would have finished her off.
So the fire could have been set simply to cover up evidence?
Maybe. Or the killer could have been making doubly sure the job was done. You see, the timing is crucial. If the bed had been set alight immediately, it would be touch and go whether the blocked airways or the flames stopped the heart.
What's your opinion?
Well, if the body had been found face down, it would have pointed to death by fire, but it wasn't. And there's also no trace of carbon in the airways. A quantity of vomit, but no carbon.
So your guess would be that death occurred before the fire was lit?
Well, pathology isn't about guesswork, Sergeant, as you know, so let's examine the evidence, eh? You see these sort of bluish-red marks on the legs, here and here?
Yeah, they look a bit like bruises.
That's hypostasis, what my American colleagues would call lividity. Basically, it's caused by gravity pulling the blood to the lower part of the body, wherever that happens to be, once the heart stops pumping. Could have set in, anything from half an hour to 4 hours after death. And there were no signs of rigor mortis when I first examined the body at the hotel. Rigor normally develops within 2 to 4 hours of death. But it would have been faster in that hotel room. They always keep them too hot, don't you find?
Well, I don't get to stay in hotels too often. So, can you pinpoint the time of death?
Well, I'd say she'd been dead less than 2 hours when I first saw her. And the hypostasis indicates she was already dead when the fire was started.
And cause of death?
Yes, asphyxia caused by gastric contents blocking the airways.
She choked in her own vomit?
Nah. We should have been on her back, unconscious, so the body's natural cleansing reaction would have been hampered.
Would the killer have known she was dead before he started the fire?
Well, there was a significant lapse of time, as I say. Anything from half an hour to 2 hours.
And the fire would have set off the smoke alarm almost immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So that animal must have sat in the room and waited till she choked to death before finishing her off.
Aye. And I don't think he was reading the Gideon Bible.
So, what have we got, Ray?
Well, it was bad enough in 77, but I'm a bit older now, sir. My constitution's not what it used to be. I don't think I'd like revisiting my past.
Mm-hmm.
Not that part of it, anyway.
Sounds nasty enough. Do you think it's a copycat?
Carbon copy.
Montgomery, don't make it worse.
Oh, sorry, sir. Thanks.
What do you think, Ray?
Well, I don't know, sir. It's just too much of a coincidence. And if I remember rightly, we didn't release too many details about the method. Either that or the papers were a bit more restrained in those days.
Oh, I think you're probably right. Though it's before my time. My guess is if you solve this one, you'll get to the bottom of the earlier cases too.
Sir, there's one thing that's bothering me.
Huh? And what's that, Richard?
Well, the glue, sir. I mean, this killing's got all the hallmarks of a trap. Somebody being lured into a glue-sniffing game, then being killed. But sniffing glue is hardly what you'd expect at this sort of level. And this isn't kids with a crisp packet and a nicked tube of Eva stick. This is a band that can afford to stay at the Hilton.
Yes, sir, and they were in Milan last month. I'd have thought cocaine was more their poison.
Yeah, but that's another throwback. Sniffing glue came in with punk. Really all part of that scene, the sort of downmarket approach to life. The more self-destructive and nasty, the better. I don't know, maybe I'm completely wrong, but I think there's a connection.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, what else do we have?
Well, not a lot, sir, to be honest.
What about this girl's movement?
Well, sir, the manager of the other group is the last person to have seen her alive, apparently. That's this guy, Max. And Deirdre Wilson reckons they could have been sleeping together.
Deirdre Wilson?
Yes, sir. I interviewed her this morning. She's a member of the support band, the one Sharon was with. Actually, DC King got a completely different story from the Australians.
Australians?
Yes, sir. The laughing tree in an Australian group.
I hope that doesn't mean they're going to be on the other side of the world before we get this cleared up.
I told them to stay put. Last night's was the final show of the tour, so they're not in a hurry to get anywhere. A couple of them seemed quite happy to hang about Glasgow for a while. Said something about taking in a Celtic game.
They get more buzz out of the glue.
Montgomery, I'll pretend I didn't hear that. Anyway, what are these people saying?
Well, sir, the other band members say there's no way Max would have been sleeping with Sharon.
Well, how can you be sure?
According to them, there's only one woman for Max. They reckon she's old enough to be his mother, but wherever they go, he passes up on the groupies to spend his time with her.
Well, and have you spoken with this woman?
No, sir, that's the problem. Nobody knows where she is. Apparently she and Max are the real set two at the sound check yesterday, and she stormed out. She hasn't been seen since.
Yeah, well, we'd better find her and talk to her.
Yes, sir. And, sir, I think that'll be the same woman that nearly mowed WPC Willems and me down yesterday.
Well,
You saw her?
Yes, sir. I'm pretty sure. We went to see the Laughing Tree people about a stolen guitar, but it turned out to be a wild goose chase. Max was in the middle of an argument with some woman, and she stomped out, nearly knocking us over.
Max? Who's Max? Doesn't anybody know this man's name?
McVeigh, sir. It's McVeigh.
Right. Now, has anybody questioned this McVeigh about his girlfriend's whereabouts?
I was just going to, sir. That's top of my list for this morning.
No. Leave it to somebody who's on duty, Montgomery.
No, it's all right.
You won't get home for a rest.
It's all right, sir. I'm on the morning shift.
But I thought you were first at the Locust. How come?
Actually, I was staying at the hotel, sir, with a friend. The fire alarm got me out of bed.
I don't believe this. All right, Montgomery, you go. Take WPC Williams with you. And you two, get off home.
Sir, I've already asked WPC Williams and PC Hamilton to check back on the 1977 killings to see if they can shed any light. I'm honestly not in the mood for sleep. I think I'd rather have a word with the dead girl's family.
Okay, Ray. But make sure you do get some rest. There is a life beyond this office, so I'm told.
Yes, sir. I'll ask Montgomery about that.
It was a nice guy like you doing in a joint like this last night, Malcolm, eh?
Something you wouldn't understand, Richard, old son. I believe the French call it l'amour.
Aye, and we call it sex. I might have known there was a woman involved.
No, we're at the Laughing Tree gig. It was great. The woman in question enjoyed my company so much, she didn't want the night to end. So, we booked in here.
Woman in question? What was in question? Her sanity?
Hey, listen, you'll never forget the experience, I tell you. And come to think of it, I don't think I will.
Oh, hey, all right. You can spare me the details.
What's keeping this guy?
Oh! What's the rush, man? Keep your hair on.
Morning, Mr. McVeigh. Or afternoon, I suppose. I'm Detective Constable King. This is DC Montgomery.
Police? What's going on?
Quite a lot, actually, while you've been asleep. I think we met yesterday, Mr. McVeigh, if you remember.
Oh, right. Right, I got it. The guitar, right? No, I told you there was a mix-up. There's no need to waste your time on that. Can I give you some consoles?
We're not here about the guitar. It's a bit more serious than that. Can we come in?
Sure. Be my guest. Watch your step, though. I don't know which bottles are dead and which are only wounded, but I could find something in the minibar if you fancy a drink.
No, thanks.
Oh, right. On duty, of course. You don't mind if I do. My tongue feels like a wallaby's jockstrap.
And go ahead.
Go, Dale. Look at the state of these files. It's a wonder they managed to solve anything in those days. The reports are a complete shambles.
I'm fascinated by the newspaper ad. Lewis's sale, gent's safari jacket, matching trousers, $8.95.
Hell, is she? Hey, I bet your Ray Sussex still got his.
Watch it, Hamilton.
Anyway, they're back in fashion, aren't they? The white hunter look.
Hey, hold on. Look at this.
What, the punk pyromaniac? Is that what they called him? That's pathetic.
No, bottom of the page. The missing boy story.
Oh, yeah. Police in Glasgow have stepped up their search for 18-year-old John McVeigh, who was last seen signing on at Maryhill DHSS 9 days ago. So what?
Well, that name, John McVeigh, that's the same name I saw on Max's credit cards when I picked them up yesterday.
Well, it's not exactly an uncommon name, is it?
No, maybe not around here, but I wouldn't think there'd be too many of them in Adelaide. And it's just a wee bit of a coincidence that one John McVeigh disappears at the time of these two murders, and another one shows up 18 years later, same city, and a very similar murder, a very unusual murder.
So what's this, Elka? Woman's intuition?
Funny. No, I call it inspiration.
Me, come on. Come on. Me, this is Sergeant Sussex to the police. This is my wife, May Sergeant. And Father Glancy. Mm-hmm. Don't mind if he stays here.
No.
Not at all. Would you like a cup of tea, Sergeant?
Please, milk and two sugar.
Aye, she was a lovely girl, Sergeant. But high-spirited. Just a typical girl at that age. She had a good heart. We're all going to miss her.
It's a cursed father, that's what it is. This family's been paid back for something that's no normal. Lightning doesn't strike twice. We're cursed sure as God.
Come on now, May. That's no way to talk.
It's just coincidence. It's a terrible thing, but you mustn't let your...
I'm sorry, coincidence? What do you mean, coincidence? Mrs. Craig?
It was Mrs. Craig's nephew, Joseph.
That's what I'm saying. It's no natural. Oh, God help us, what have we done to deserve this?
What are you saying?
Aye, it was her nephew, Joseph. Just a young fellow. He died in a fire, too. But that must have been the best part of 20 years ago. It's a terrible thing, grief. Plays games with the memory, Sergeant. I'm sure you see that in your job as often as I do.
Ask your teeth, Sergeant. I'm sorry there's no biscuit in house. But the one thing and another.
Oh, don't worry about it. Tea's fine. So, can you tell me more about this nephew that died in the fire?
Still the wife to forget about that. I mean, it was years ago. It must have been 20 years at least.
No, it's no. You might have forgot, but that's why Sharon started all this pop group rubbish in the first place. And I wish to God she'd never clapped her eyes on any of it.
Mrs. Craig, can you...
Aye. You see, Sergeant... Joseph was in one of the groups and old Sharon just idolized him. And when he died, I mean, even at her young age, she took it terrible bad. Wasn't it right for months? And then when she came out, all she could say was about how she was going to be a star for Joseph.
This boy Joseph, is his name Craig?
It certainly was not. Not in the day by my side of the useless bloody lump. No, he was the wife's sister's boy. Corbett, his name was.
Joseph Corbett? Mrs. Craig, would you by any chance be Stella Corbett's sister?
How do you know about Stella?
Aye. Stella's May's sister. May's a pity.
And she doesn't still live at Kilbury Street?
They seem to know an awful lot about her. Is there something I don't know here?
Mrs. Craig, I worked on the case when Joseph was killed.
Well, I hope you get a better result this time.
Can you tell me, does Stella Corbett still live in Kilbury Street?
No, she hasn't been there for a long time.
So where can I find her? I think I ought to have a word with her.
You could try Australia. Your guess is as good as yours.
No, I haven't heard of Stella for years. Not even as much as a Christmas card. Last I saw her was when she left for Australia no long after Joseph died. She couldn't take the loneliness, she said. Wanted to start our again.
Aye. Our man had walked out in there years before. Can't you say I blame him?
And John McVeigh never showed up, sir. Nor his body.
You've checked?
Yes, sir. Still in the file was missing.
This Australian's about the right age. It's just possible he could be the same man.
Mm-hmm. Well, I must say this is a good piece of work. Well done.
Thank you, sir.
It might come to nothing, but it proves what I've always maintained. Attention to detail every time. Now, we'd better get Ray Sussock in on this. Any ideas? Elpa?
I think I know where to find him, sir.
Jeez, man, I'm broken up about it. I really am. She was a sweet kid. I mean, who would do a thing like that?
So what exactly was your relationship with her?
I didn't have one, and that's the truth.
According to Deirdre Wilson, she was pursuing you all over the place.
Deirdre? That the redhead girl? Well, I suppose she was, but there was nothing in it. The usual stuff. She wanted me to give her a leg up in the business, make her a star and all that crap. You know, she kept cracking on about how she really wanted to go solo. Dump the secrets. I mean, that's a hell of a name for a group. Sounds like some bog Irish show band.
Well, the Laughing Tree's not exactly Led Zeppelin, is it?
Huh? Well, anyway, I tried to be kind, but she really didn't have it, you know.
But admit you and her were the last to leave the bar.
Yeah, okay, I did sink a few with her, but I can't remember when I left the bar, let alone who I was in there with.
It's been suggested you and Sharon might have gone to bed together.
What am I being accused of here? I mean, she's not a minor, is she?
Well?
Well, what? No, we didn't, if you must know.
According to some of the band, you're involved with some woman that travels the world with you. Wherever you go on tour, she's there. Is that correct? Can you tell us anything about this woman, like where she is now, for instance?
Hey, look, leave her out of this. This has nothing to do with her.
Is she the woman you were arguing with yesterday?
When? I don't know what you're talking about.
At the Barrowland, you were in the middle of a sound check and you were arguing with a woman.
Look, I'm telling you, this has nothing to do with her, and I haven't a clue where she is. I haven't seen her since we had the bust.
What's her name?
I told you, she's not involved in any of this.
Nobody's saying she is, Miss McVeigh. We just want to talk to her.
She's not involved.
I'm very sure about that. Do you happen to know who is involved?
Oh, for God's sake, come on, of course I don't.
Just give us her name. We'll find her for you.
Hey, get off my case, man, will you? Stella will be back when she calms down. She always comes back.
I don't like this one, sir. I feel as if too many of the clues are stuck in the past and they might stay there.
Could be, Ray, could be.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're on the verge of solving three murders here. Devlin's and Corbett's as well as Sharon Craig's. Anyway, I'm sending Montgomery down to London. Talk to the third member of that group. What were they called again?
The Travis Bickle Band.
Travis Bickle Band, yeah. Well, there seem to be three surviving members. Hamilton and Willems have been performing heroics on the files, and they've traced the drummer, one Jim McClarty, to a record company office in London.
Well, I'm afraid the answer might lie a bit further away in London, sir.
Australia? I hope not.
Well, I can't get that Stella Corbett woman out of my mind.
Hmm. Joseph Corbett was the second victim, of course.
Yes, and Stella was his mother. And I mean, mother and son, you'd expect them to be close, God knows, but they were something else by all accounts. Some neighbour at the time described them like brother and sister. She used to go and watch all his shows.
Well, proud mum, fair enough.
Yeah, but if you were a punk rocker, would you want your mother sitting in the front row?
Well, from what I can remember about punk, frankly, no.
And then after the fire, she insisted in seeing the body. I mean, it was so badly burned, it was practically unrecognisable as a human being, let alone anybody's son.
So how did they identify him? Dental records?
No, his last visit to the dentist had been a check-up when he was in primary school. Identification was mainly down to Stella and a few personal effects on his bedside table. I remember a watch shaped like a skull and crossbones, not much else.
Sounds a bit flimsy.
Anyway, Stella cleared off to Australia, and I'm beginning to think she took a few clues with her.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ray, the nearest thing we have to a suspect just happens to be Australian with a missing girlfriend that answers to the name Stella.
Well, to be honest, I always thought Dev had done it himself. Not suicide, just plain stupidity. He'd have done anything for a high. Bag of glue over the head wasn't difficult to believe. Oh, excuse me a second.
Hey, you guys, calm down, Rapid. I've got one of the Majesty's finest in here.
Once I know hopeless. Jesus. They don't even look the part. What's that word they use these days? Androgynous? I told them not to sign them, but who listens to me? I mean, I'm only the A&R man.
Anyway, Mr. McClarty, you were thinking back to the deaths of Tommy Devlin and Joseph Corbett.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, as I said, I thought Dev had done himself in. I know you lot fancied JC for it at the time. Certainly they'd been at each other's throats. But to be honest, we all were. The band was falling apart, then JC went down too. Saved us finding an excuse to call it a day. That's pretty cynical, but I mean, it was a long time ago.
Can you remember what it was Corbett and Devlin were arguing about?
Hey, you not get any hard questions. They only ever argued about one thing, Stella. That was JC's mother. She was always poking her nose in and always in the same trough. She wanted JC to be the star, and that was it. The rest of us were just make-weights as far as she was concerned. JC wrote the songs. He should get the glory.
God, look at the state of you, Ray. You must have been on duty for, what, 18 hours now? Shouldn't you be getting to bed?
Yeah, could be doing with a sleep. And there's nothing going to happen in this case till Montgomery gets back from London or we find the elusive Stella. To be honest, I go home, but it's impossible to get a sleep in that place during a day like ours. I caught one of these let's be kind and call him a student. Anyway, I caught one of them the other day, eating cold beans right out the tin.
Oh, heavens.
Yeah, well, my name was written on the label. And you know what he did when I challenged him?
No, tell me.
He took a tin of rice pudding out the cupboard and handed it to me. He said the rice was dearer than the beans, but he let me off with a difference. I don't even like rice pudding. Okay, I need to get a shift out of that place.
Well, Richard King's supposed to pick Malcolm up at the airport at 1400. Here. Take my keys and get your head down at my place. Nothing's going to happen till the graveyard shift when you're back on anyway.
You must be in overtime yourself, Bernard.
You don't want to sign off and help me get the bed warmed up.
Sasuk! In the middle of the day. Anyway, I get paid for my overtime.
Oh, well.
Hi, Malcolm. Have a good trip.
Yeah, not too bad. I got the phone number off one of the stewardesses, but I think it could be a false one. You ever heard of a Glasgow district with phone code 666?
I think she might be trying to tell me something. Did you get anything for the case?
Well, her name's Stella cropped up again.
Ah, surprise, surprise. Hey, wait a minute. Hang on, that's Max. I'm sure it is.
What?
McVeigh. It's him getting out of the limo. I thought he was told to stay in Glasgow. And who's that with him?
That's her. That's the woman we bumped into at the sound check. I'll give you 10-1, that's her. That's Stella.
Right, we better take them in.
Hold on a sec.
That's weird.
What is?
The way he kissed her.
It's not exactly the big reconciliation scene, is it?
Not how you kiss your lover that you hadn't seen since you had the big bust up.
Well, I wouldn't know about that kind of thing, Malcolm, but I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, God, my mother used to do that when I skinned my knee or something.
This case gets more bizarre by the minute. I think we better have a word with him.
Oh, we better make it quick. She looks as if she's in a hurry.
We can hold him for disobeying your instruction not to leave Glasgow, but we've no grounds for keeping the woman here.
But she's admitted she's Stella Corbett.
Exactly, she's never denied it. We'll have to let her go, Ray.
But I'm sure she can shed some light on her son's death, if none of the others.
Ray, we had our chance in 77. Anyway, she won't be going far. We can bring her back in if you have anything more than a gut feeling to go on. But first of all, we've got to prove that John McVeigh we have in custody is the same one that disappeared at the time of Joseph Corbett's murder. I'm going to question him. You want to sit in?
No, thanks, sir. He can lie in his teeth, but I think I'll go and have a word with somebody that won't.
I'm sorry to bother you at this hour, Mr. McVeigh, but I think we may have some information about a certain John McVeigh. I believe that was your brother's name and that he disappeared a number of years ago.
John? Are you kidding? John? My brother John?
Hmm.
After all these years? My God. You better come in.
Thank you.
So, you live alone, Mr. McVeigh?
No, not usually. The wife and kids are down at Butlin's with another girl in Harwains, and they're due back tomorrow morning. I couldn't go because of my work. Couldn't get the time off. So, what's this about John? I'm frightened to ask. You know what I mean?
John's your older brother, right?
Aye. And we were pretty close. My mother died about 2 years before John disappeared. My father was steadily drinking himself into the grave beside her, so we had to look out for one another. It's not uncommon.
Mr. McVeigh, I know it's a long time, but can you remember what his mood was like before he disappeared? If there's anything you can think of.
No. It's not a problem. There's hardly a week goes by when I don't think about it. Trying to see if anything jumps out that could give me a clue. I mean, we were really close. When John went, it was as if part of myself would take your time. No, it's okay.
Could you just run over it again?
Well, John had been unemployed since he left school 2 years earlier. He was pretty miserable. The usual story, I suppose. No job and no prospects. I didn't realise it at the time. I suppose it was the clever big brother syndrome or something, but some of the things I remember John doing make me think he wasn't quite right. Not retarded, maybe, but a wee bit slow, you know what I mean?
Was there anything unusual going on in his life when he disappeared? I mean, was he in any kind of trouble? Any new friends?
No. That's the funny thing. I got the impression his life was taking a turn for the better. I mean, he got back some of his old self, taking an interest in things.
Like music, for instance.
God, aye. Funny you should say that. He got into punk. Punk rock, you know. That was all the rage for the kids then. And John started following this group around. He even had a girlfriend. And that was really something new for him. I mean, he was basically a shy sort of fella. Anyway, when he disappeared, That was the first thing I thought, that he'd maybe run off somewhere with her.
What about this girlfriend? Can you tell me anything about her?
No, I never met her. I mean, according to John, she was a real good looker. A wee bit older than him.
A wee bit older?
Well, maybe a good bit. I thought he was just exaggerating. You know what young fellas are like. She was involved in the music business anyway. Well, so he said. To tell you the truth, I started thinking she was just a figment of his imagination. She sounded too good to be true. Every young boy's fantasy.
Did she have a name?
Come to think of it, she did. Sheila, I don't know, something like that. Listen, you said you had some new stuff about John.
Stella. Could it have been Stella?
Aye, it could have been. What's the fresh evidence?
Look, I don't want to build your hopes up too much, Mr. McVeigh. We've got somebody in custody who could be your brother. It's just possible.
What? Where's he been?
Well, this man's been living in Australia. We're pretty sure his name's John McVeigh, but he denies being the same one. Maybe if you could take a look at him for us, there might be something you'd recognise.
It's a bit heavy to take in. I mean, if it is him, you'd think he'd have been in touch. The first thing he'd do, you know. It's the same house. Never been out of it since John and I were kids. You'd think he'd have tracked me down, his own brother. Listen, do you think I could have the night to sleep on it? And get my head round it, so to speak, and come in the morning?
Sure, you take your time, Mr. McVeigh. He's been missing for 18 years so far. Another 12 hours isn't going to make much difference.
And you said this guy was in custody. What's he done?
Oh, you don't need to concern yourself with that. Just get a good night's sleep. You could have a big day ahead of you.
Has anybody contacted Ray Sussex?
Yes, I managed to track him down. He was asleep at home. He'll be here any minute.
Well, this will be a rude awakening. He won't like this.
Not if it was his only chance of proving Max's identity.
And Max has the perfect alibi.
Yeah, being he was in one of our cells at the time.
Well, I don't want to be the one to tell him.
I want to tell who what?
Oh, hello, Ray. We didn't see you come in.
What is it you all don't want to tell me?
Your witness, Gerald McVeigh. He's dead.
Oh, for God's sake! What happened? I don't believe this. Elka, what happened?
He'd been stabbed. His wife and children came home this morning and found him alive and bleeding. Mrs. McVeigh phoned an ambulance, but he'd lost too much blood. He died before he reached the hospital.
Stabbed? 3 times in the back. Dr. Chan's seen him. We're still waiting for Dr. Reynolds.
Right. Get Stella Corbett in here.
You think it was her?
All I know is, every time we look like we're making any headway with this, it all goes wrong. And one name keeps cropping up. Stella Corbett.
All right, let's kick it around, Ray.
It's the 1977 case all over against her. I was on the verge of arresting Corbett and he was killed. Now we're inches away from connecting McVeigh to the murders, and the one person who can identify him is stabbed to death.
So what part does Stella Corbett play in this?
Gerard McVeigh said his brother was involved with an older woman called Stella. And as it happens, she was in the music business. Let's say that's Stella Corbett. What if Joseph Corbett finds out about the relationship and objects to this young boy having an affair with his mother?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wouldn't be the first time some teenagers become unhinged about his mother's sex life.
No, no, no.
And Stella and McVeigh, either one or both, might have got rid of him to protect their relationship. Then they take off to Australia, one at a time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't quite add up, Ray. I mean, what about the first victim, Tommy Devlin?
Well, that's one of the things I need to ask Stella.
Mm-hmm. I think I'll sit in on this.
Right, interview commencing 14:07. I am Detective Sergeant Raymond Sussex.
I'm Detective Inspector Fabian Dunningham.
Could you please identify yourself for the tape, Mrs. Corbett?
Stella Corbett.
And Mr. McCabe?
I'm Terence McCabe, solicitor representing Mrs. Corbett. Sergeant Sussex, I would ask you to remember throughout this interview that no charges have been brought against my client.
Yes. Now, Stella, we have good reason to believe that Max is the same John McVeigh who disappeared around the same time as your son was killed in 1977. It looks as if he might go down for a very long time, and you are in the frame as an accomplice.
Sergeant,
I don't know what you're talking about. I met Max in Brisbane, after I'd been living in Australia 5 or 6 years. I've never heard of this other John McVeigh. You can't charge somebody with being in possession of a suspicious name.
I spoke to John McVeigh's brother last night. He told me all about John's girlfriend. He described you to a T.
Oh, so what did he say? Thin? Blonde? Half the women in Glasgow use the same bleach.
But they're not all called Stella, are they?
Look, it's nearly 20 years since Joseph died. This is upsetting for me, apart from anything else. You never get over something like that, you know. Anyway, do you honestly think I could be described the same way now as when I was in my 30s? I don't even know why I'm here.
Mrs. Corbett, I want to take you back to Joseph's death.
Inspector, does my client really have to go through all this again? We're talking about something that happened nearly 20 years ago. It's surely finished.
Mrs. Corbett, can you tell me, had Joseph any enemies? Anybody that might have had a grudge against him or that might want him out of the way?
I don't know what you mean. Joseph was in a rock band. Everybody in the business has got enemies. People that don't like your face or don't like your music. Remember John Lennon? Everybody's a critic.
No, I mean, had you fallen out with anybody specifically? Somebody within the immediate circle, somebody either in the band or connected with it?
I don't think so. I told the police all this at the time. He was a very popular boy.
And what about you, Stella? Were you popular?
What's that supposed to mean?
Yes, come in. Interview terminated 14:15. Yes, what is it?
Sorry to interrupt, sir, but it's very urgent. If I could have a word with you.
Excuse me.
The scene of crime is finished up in the bail office, I think.
Sergeant, just how long do you plan to keep my client here? I don't remember anyone agreeing to this interview, and you haven't made any charges.
I'm sorry, Mr. McCabe, we're only doing our job, as I'm sure you're aware. If you'd like some coffee brought in.
Is that your best offer?
Right, thank you, W.P. Sue Adams. Thank you very much. Okay. Interview resumes 14:17. Do you want to carry on, Sergeant?
Sure.
I think we might go to the heart of the matter. Let's tell Mrs. Corbett what we know.
Think you know.
Will I go ahead, sir?
Oh, yes.
All right, Stella. Let me put something to you. And this isn't a hypothesis. We've got sound evidence. It's about you and John McVeigh. At the time your son was murdered, you and McVeigh were lovers, right?
You don't have to answer any of this, Mrs. Corbett.
You and this big, simple teenage laddie were lovers and your son objected. He couldn't stand seeing his mother make a fool of herself. People have killed for less.
Have they now?
Oh, yes. And been killed for less. And your son, Joseph, got completely out of control. He threatened him. Or you, I don't know. But he was certainly going to put an end to the affair. So your toy boy, no doubt with your support, took steps to get rid of him.
Look, how many times do I have to tell you? I didn't know this other John McVeigh.
We think you did, Stella. In fact, we're pretty damn sure of it. We think you've been living with him since you moved to Australia. So it's only a matter of time before Max goes down for 3 murders. And when he rolls over, I reckon we'll get you for your share. And very likely a fourth. We'll come to that in a minute. But you think about it, Stella. One way or another, you're up for at least 3 murders between you. There won't be much of your great romance left by the time he gets out.
You'll never get it to stick.
Ray, do you mind if I come in here?
Yes, sir.
Well, Stella, I think you're in for a shock. Incidentally, Sergeant, that interruption came from Mr. Bothwell. You won't know him, Stella, but I'm sure Mr. McCabe does.
Mm-hmm.
He's our fingerprint person, and I'm told that not only do we now have the murder weapon, your standard 5-inch kitchen knife, but also a very clear set of prints. Oh, and an old lady across the street apparently had insomnia and remarkably good eyesight for her age. Have you anything to say, Stella?
You know, you're in for a time of it when the other cons find out that you've been living with the man that killed your son.
Inspector, I think my client took another moment.
He didn't kill my son. He didn't.
Well, that's the way it looks, Stella.
He didn't do it. I didn't.
Mrs. Corbett, for God's sake, you don't need to say any more.
Are you telling me you suffocated your own son, then set his body on fire?
Mrs. Corbett,
I didn't kill my son. Max is my son. Max is Joseph Corbett.
My God. Maybe you'd better start from the beginning. Okay, Mrs. Corbett? Who killed Tommy Devlin?
Oh, him. He was easy. A bag of glue was like a ticket to heaven for him. People like him don't deserve any better. He kept taunting Joseph with a newspaper cutting. Some know-nothing reviewer. I remember the night Joseph first met that thing. He was in tears. He wrote the songs. It was his band. And this creep said Devlin would be better off going solo. I mean, he was a nothing. A non-entity. Joseph was the star. He was the one with the talent. I had to take Devlin out of the picture.
So then you killed John McVeigh and passed him off as your own son?
I didn't want to kill John. He was different. Just a silly wee boy. It was actually you that made me do it, if you must know.
Me?
Yes. When it looked as if Joseph was going to be charged with Devlin's murder, I had to do something. I'd seen John McVeigh waving his birth certificate around. He needed it as proof of age. I mean, he didn't look old enough to get in any place. Well, the rest seemed obvious.
Enlighten us, please.
I've got to know John. Made him believe I fancied him. He was a complete innocent. One night I took him up to Joseph's room in the hotel. He was desperate to be one of the lads, of course. Anyway, we had sex, and I got him to try the glue. He thought it would be good for his street cred.
And you murdered him in cold blood?
Once he was unconscious, I fished out his birth certificate. Then I put Joseph's watch on the table beside the bed. A few squirts of lighter fuel and a match, and that was it. I remember you, Sergeant Sussex. You were very kind.
How was that?
Very comforting. Held on to me tight when he took me in to see the body. I was petrified in case it was going to be found out. But the sergeant kept apologizing for putting me through the ordeal. Actually, when I saw the state of poor John lying there, I burst out crying. I couldn't help myself. I think that convinced you, Sergeant.
And Joseph Corbett's been living as John McVeigh ever since. My God.
So where does Sharon Craig fit into this?
Her? She came to London to see the group. She got Max on his own, told him she knew who he was. She did too. I mean, they were cousins. Pretty close, I suppose. Anyway, she managed to charm Max. Said she'd keep his secret. All she wanted was a leg up in the music business.
But you knew better. So how did you get Sharon to put the glue bag over her head? Did Max help? Did he hold her down?
I think I've said enough. You can switch that off now.
Interview terminated. 1422.
No, she certainly wasn't daft, Elka. Crazy like a fox, maybe.
Has he admitted his part in it?
No, he keeps blaming Stella. God knows what a jury will make of it.
That's a mess. Do you want one egg or two with this, Ray?
Just a one, thanks. You know what really gets me about this case? It's that last poor guy, McVeigh's brother. If you'd seen how pleased he was, thinking maybe his brother was still alive somewhere, then she tidies him up like another loose end.
Horrible. At least he was stabbed, I suppose. Not like the others.
Yeah. Elka, if you don't mind, I think I'll just have a cup of tea.
In Secret Affair, the part of Stella was played by Alexa Kessler, Max by Clark Crystal, D.C. Montgomery by Stuart Macquarie, and W.P.C. Elka Willems by Eliza Langland. D.C. Abernethy was played by Andrew Conlon, D.C. King by Liam Brennan, Dr. Reynolds by Paul Young, and Deirdre by Amy McKenzie. D.I. Donahue was played by Crawford Logan, P.C. Hamilton by Martin McCarty, Jared McVeigh by Ian McCrae, and Mr. McCabe by Michael Percival Maxwell. May Craig was played by Alexis Daly, and Jim McClarty by Kenny Ryan. Other parts were played by members of the cast. Secret Affair was written by Danny McCahan and directed on location in Glasgow and in our Edinburgh studios by Hamish Wilson.